Your argument, Miller versus Jones, Mr. Smokowitz.
Good morning, Your Honors. As this court is probably well aware, this appeal involves two categories of speech by former Officer Miller. The first was statements about a proposed collaboration between the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee. And the organization, which was a sort of unusual private non-for-profit corporation, but it had the involvement of the government in the sense that officers were basically loaned out and were central to the program of the police athletic league. And Mr. Miller was the executive director of this organization, wearing that hat because of his police officer's hat. And he has a claim that his statements that he made, and which apparently were taking the case in the light best of the plaintiffs, made known to Chief Jones back in the spring or fall of 2002, that he opposed the chief's notion that perhaps these two organizations, the Boys and Girls Club and the Police Athletic League, should collaborate. The second item or category of speech, I guess I should talk about, and that is involved here, is the statements, and there is some, the record is a little hazy, at least from other sources, not from Mr. Miller, as to what he talked about. But in any event, some of his statements about the activities of the private contractor that had been hired to build an athletic building for this police athletic league. The city submits to this court that it should conclude that both of these types of speech fall within the regular duties of Miller as a police officer in this assignment to PAL. And as a result, this speech is not protected under the First Amendment by a public employee in this situation. We have submitted to the court in part, in addition, and then I would submit, Your Honors, that this is consistent with this court's decision in Gonzales and its later decision in Delgado, that it does not run afoul of either. I am sure the court is also well aware that this general issue, at least the subject of speech by a public employee in the course of his or her duties, scope of employment speech, is the subject of a pending appeal that's been argued in the United States Supreme Court, Garcetti versus Ceballos. Regardless of the outcome of that,
from the Ninth Circuit taking a contrary position, right?
The Ninth Circuit taking the position that, yes, that speech, regardless of whether it was within his scope of employment or part of his duties, that speech was protected. And then, of course, there is the concurrence from Judge O'Scanlan in that case pointing out the very problem with some of these things. Now,
what is the name of that case?
Garcetti versus Ceballos.
Garcetti?
Yes, in the Ninth Circuit, Your Honor, it is.
How do you spell it?
Garcetti. And the Ceballos is Ceballos. In the Ninth Circuit, the citation is 361 F3rd, 1168. Judge O'Scanlan's opinion. 1168, I'm sorry, Your Honor, if I misspoke. And Judge O'Scanlan's concurring opinion begins, I believe, at about page... I always have a hard time with these Westlaw printouts, but I believe it's 1185. And there is a discussion in his concurrence, at his footnote 2 on a page 1188, about this court's holdings in Delgado in particular. In any event, this case is somewhat different, and that difference may further counsel for the protection of qualified immunity, because after all, we are here on at this appeal at this stage because of a qualified immunity issue, and the second part of the qualified immunity test. This case presents kind of an unusual set of statements within the context of public employment because they present statements not of fact but of opinion, at least in part, at least as to the collaboration. And that's really not an issue that's been addressed even in the Garcetti case, much less we would submit in Delgado or Gonzalez. And let me explain it a little more clearly by example. Part of my job is to provide you with my opinions, or I should say our opinions, as to what the meaning of certain cases is and how they should be interpreted and how cases should be decided. Certain public employees, lawyers, auditors, financial officers, even Internal Affairs Division investigators perhaps, professors, have an obligation in their job to provide opinions. Mr. Miller was in that unusual circumstance, at least with respect to this first set of speech.
I don't understand. Can a state university fire a professor for for an opinion because that's his business? I don't understand.
Well, that question was asked, kind of at least as my understanding is, Judge Posner.
That's your argument?
Yes, that question
That's pretty hopeless.
Well, Judge, that question was asked, at least from my understanding, from the news reports.
And you're really saying public officials have no free speech?
No, I am not saying that, Your Honor. But I am saying that, for example, Ohio State University should have the ability to say to a professor, I'm sorry, you cannot teach the opinion that, let's say, Al-Qaeda is a holy organization and that the government should be overthrown by it.
I don't think you're right there.
Well, Judge, that very question was asked by Justice Roberts in the oral argument in Garcetti. And this case presents this problem because here we have a chief of police who ultimately is responsible for the allocation of police resources, department personnel, and he's got an opinion about whether this organization is better off or not collaborating. And I think, of course, the problem here is that Mr. Miller.
Now, look, there are defenses which public officials like a chief of police have when they're accused of stifling the free speech of their employees. Can be but we haven't reached that point here. Your argument is that he didn't have a prima facie case of infringement of freedom of speech because he's a public employee. I don't understand that.
Well, he didn't have a prima facie case because this speech is a part of his regular duties. He was expected to express his opinion about it. He was expected to bring out to the board's attention.
The paradox of your argument is you're suggesting because a public official is supposed to express opinions, he's supposed to give his views, he doesn't have any right to disagree with his superiors. I don't get that.
Well, it may be,
especially in a university setting, it seems preposterous. Well, to say that professors at public universities have no free speech rights. That's fantastic.
I would not go so far as to say that, Your
Honor.
Well,
you did 2 minutes ago.
I would go so far to say as something as an opinion, expressed as an opinion, as opposed to something expressed just in general, this is what Al-Qaeda stands for.
Well, an opinion about Al-Qaeda, that's clearly an opinion, right? You have an opinion. You think it's a great organization, something like that. Well, that's what free speech is about, right? That's having unorthodox opinions on controversial matters.
In addition, in general, Your Honor, I agree, but we have here a public employee. Perhaps the point I should reemphasize, however, is that the expression of his opinion was a part of his job. He's duty-bound to express an opinion here. And we submit that because that's precisely his job, his employer, that speech is not protected. I see my yellow light's on, so I would say.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smokowitz. Mr. Retko?
May it please the court. I'm Bill Retko, and I do represent plaintiff in this case, James E. Miller. There's a couple things I want to point out that I think needs to be pointed out. Mr. Smolkowitz's argument is that James Miller was executive director of the Police Athletic League because of his police officer hat. Facts don't support that. The facts show that James Miller became the executive director by applying for the position and interviewing before the board of directors, a board of directors that was not connected with the police department. It's a nonprofit private organization. The police department's role in this...
Why should that make any difference? I don't understand that.
Only to the extent that Mr. Smolkowitz is trying to paint the picture.
But that argument is ridiculous. I mean, this fellow, he could run against the police. If this were an elected post, the police officer could run against him and say, you know, he's incompetent and so on, right? We have loads of cases like that. It doesn't matter that he's a public employee.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Generally speaking, Your Honor, this case is a case that is no different than many of the cases that have been presented to this court on several other occasions in regard to First Amendment protection of speech and in regard to qualified immunity. Judge Kern correctly sized up the facts in this case, correctly ruled on the case based on prior precedent of this court, and we believe that the decision should be upheld, that Arthur Jones, the defendant in this case, did not have qualified immunity, that the plaintiff has shown that his speech was on a matter of public concern, that the evidence in the record supports that substantial motivation by the defendant in this case was taken to retaliate against the plaintiff, and he was transferred to a less desirable position within the department. And moreover, the organization on a whole was punished.
How long had he been serving with PAL?
He'd been in the PAL since 1991, 1992, that time period, Your Honor. And he was transferred in approximately 2003, May of 2003. But his duties and rights as executive director were stripped away from him effectively in or around August of 2002. It was kind of a progression of how things transpired in this case. Started out that it was just a stripping of his duties and responsibilities as executive director and ultimately his transfer to patrol duty.
Who made the assignment back in the early 90s to PAL?
In the early 90s, what had happened was then Police Chief Philip Areola appointed Officer Miller as a liaison to the Police Athletic League. As a liaison, he then interviewed with the Police Athletic Board of Directors to get the executive director position, which was ultimately granted to him after a series of interviews and with Chief Areola's approval, ultimately. And he remained the executive director and actually took on more duties over the years and became treasurer of the organization and other things. And when the Police Athletic League had determined that they were going to build a separate facility to house their programs, that's when Executive Director Miller took on a bigger role and actually became like a contractor in the situation. Although he was still a police officer with the Milwaukee Police Department, he took on a larger role than that with the Police Athletic League and started taking on many duties and responsibilities that were assigned to him by the board. And that's how things started going down the road here with Arthur Jones make any decision that he wanted to eventually what was called a collaboration with the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee. And the collaboration was nothing more than the Boys and Girls Club wanted to use the PAL facility as a Boys and Girls Club facility, and the money that was going into the system was nothing to pay off the building that the Police Athletic League would owe on for a building they wouldn't be able to use. It was merely to pay for the Boys and Girls Club staff to run the building because they were going to use it as their own. And at that point, the plaintiff in this case opposed that at several board meetings, opposed that with several of his supervisors, and that's what caused the chain of events to begin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Retko.
Thank you.
Mr. Smolkowitz, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
First of all, Your Honor, with regard to this the issue of speech, I don't want to neglect to point out that we've also argued, in addition to the fact that this is part of Mr. Miller's duties, that it's also unprotected because, following the Tenth Circuit's case, the Mason case, the Gardetto case, that this really didn't address a core function of the police department, that this is not a matter of public concern, that this was an item of tangential speech, that is this collaboration matter. And with regard to the an item of speech that we did not address in the initial argument, and that I don't believe Mr. Redko addressed any speech about the contractor's activities here, that also is not protected. It did not involve any kind of allegations of misconduct, malfeasance, misfeasance by any public officials or public entity in this matter, and as a consequence, it is not a matter of public concern and not protected under the First Amendment.
Did Mr. Jones or then Chief Jones have a position with the Boys and Girls Club in Milwaukee?
Yes, Your Honor, he did. He was on their board of directors also. I guess an ex officio kind of capacity, in other words, by virtue of the fact that he was the chief of police for the city of Milwaukee, they invited him to be on that board. And that was how he became aware of their collaboration. And just to finish off that point, in terms of this collaboration, it was not going to be an entire usurpation of the building, as at least it was proposed. The Boys and Girls Club would pay minimal expenses to cover their costs.
Why did he fire Miller, in your view?
Well, he didn't fire Miller. He transferred Miller.
I'm sorry. Why did he transfer Miller back to the beat?
Chief Jones testified that he transferred Miller at Captain Davidowski's request because she was in charge of the community services division of the police department that this police athletic league was under, and that she had asked Miller repeatedly for reports on his duties because he was out of the office substantial periods of time. She was concerned with what he was doing and where he was, and that things were getting done in a proper and timely fashion. The reports that he submitted, in her opinion, were inadequate. She recommended his transfer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next case.